Daniel chapter 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass when I saw that I was at the Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Ulai. Then I lifted up my eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him. And there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven. And it came and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And an host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Then I heard one saint speaking, another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of the desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden there underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. And it came to pass, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then, behold, there stood before me as an appearance of man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now, as he spake, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. But he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For the time appointed, the end shall be. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are kings of Media and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, the king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. And he shall also stand up against the princes, but he shall be broken without hand. And the vision of the evenings and the morning which was told is true. Wherefore shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. The Lord will bless the reading of his word.
Yes, it's a very interesting chapter. And the reason I decided to have the whole chapter read is because from verse 1 to verse 14, you've got the vision. But from verse 15 to the end of the chapter, you've got Gabriel giving the meaning of the vision unto Daniel. So you see, there's a division within the chapter. But that's all very interesting, and we'll consider one or two things about that in a moment. But the chapter is interesting for two reasons. You see, from chapter 2 and verse 4 to chapter the end of chapter 7, Daniel is writing in the Chaldean language. But when we come to chapter 8 through to chapter 12, Daniel now reverts to writing in the Hebrew language, as he did in chapters 1 and chapter 2 to verse 3. So we find now that the fact that Daniel has changed the language indicates to us, although it still concerns the Gentile nations, it's the Gentile nations now in their relationship to Israel that is before us in these closing chapters of the prophecy. So it's very interesting from that standpoint. But then it's interesting again, that the timing of this vision. You remember that in chapter 7, Daniel received that vision in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Now he's given this vision in the third year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. So on the one hand, he's had 2 years in which to think over and think about the vision that he was given in chapter 7. But now he's given a vision in chapter 8. And of course, the timing is perfect as far as God is concerned. You'll remember that in our introduction, we did suggest to you that this book can be read in the order of the chapters, or can be read from the standpoint of the time order. And that's really important when we come to chapter 8, because the time order takes us back before chapter 5. You see, chapter 7 and chapter 8, they took place before chapter 5. And the important and the interesting thing about chapter 8, in relation to chapter 5, is this. When Daniel was called in by Belshazzar to give them the meaning of the writing upon the wall, Daniel had no difficulty in giving them the meaning of that writing, because in this vision, the angel Gabriel had given to him the important truth that was not told us in chapter 2 when the dream image was given to Nebuchadnezzar. Let me remind you again, in chapter 2, Daniel spoke about the head of gold and said unto Nebuchadnezzar, thou art the head of gold. And so we learn something about the Babylonian Empire. And that is run now for 70 years. And now we find that chapter 8 is, we're coming to the end of those 70 years, and there's going to be a change of ruler, and a change of empire, and a change of world dominion. And so we find what we're not told in chapter 2, what the breast and arms of silver refer to, and what the belly and thighs of brass refer to. In the vision, Daniel is told what those two empires were. The first, of course, was the Medes and the Persians, and the second was, of course, the Grecian Empire. So you see, chapter 8, it just gives us further insight into the meaning of the vision in chapter 2. So we come to chapter 8, and you will notice that in chapter 8 and the opening verses, it just does sort of emphasize, you know, the perfect timing of God in giving to Daniel the vision just here in preparation for what will take place in chapter 5 when the writing was upon the wall of the palace. But from verse 3 of our chapter down to verse 14, we have the vision. And then from verse 15, we have the meaning of the vision given unto Daniel by the angel Gabriel. And then there are many interpretations of this chapter, I can assure you. There are those expositors, and they see the whole chapter as being historical, everything in the chapter having been fulfilled in history. There's another group of expositors, and they say, no, the whole chapter is prophetic. And so we have these varying suggestions as to the meaning of chapter 8. Is it all historical, or is it all prophetical? But there's a middle ground, and the middle ground is this. In this vision, there's that which is historical, and yet at the same time, there's that which is prophetic, having to do with the future. So I thought we might just look at the chapter from that standpoint. You see, when we look back to history, we find that after the Babylonian Empire was conquered, the Medes and the Persians, they took over world dominion, and Babylon was their capital city from which they operated. And so we find that after the Babylonian 70 years of world rulership, we now find the Medes and the Persians are brought in, and they ruled for 200 years. And yet, at the end of that 200 years thereabouts, we find now the Grecian Empire took place of the Medo-Persian Empire. And so we find that what the angel is saying unto Daniel as to the meaning of the vision, that there were these two empires that would succeed the Babylonian Empire, we find that history confirms it was Medo-Persia, as the angel said. And following that, there was the Grecian Empire, just as the angel Gabriel had said unto Daniel. So let's have a look at history for a moment. In the vision, Daniel now has been transported unto Shushan the palace in the province of Elam. That's where Nehemiah lived. That's where Esther lived. And now Daniel has been transported in vision to the palace in Shushan in the province of Elam. He finds that he's there by the river Ulai. And as he looks, he finds that as before this river, there comes a ram. And a ram has two horns, but one horn is higher than the other. And the higher horn came up last. And as Daniel looked and beheld what he was before him in the ram, he then noticed a he-goat came. And the he-goat, he had one notable horn between his eyes. That notable horn was broken, and in its place stood up four kingdoms. And so you see, what we have in history is before us here in prophecy, when Daniel actually wrote these things. Because the Medo-Persian Empire, you remember, first of all, Darius, he was the first of the rulers that we have connection with in chapter 5 in the last verse almost. Then there was the Cyrus the Persian. Now, Cyrus the Persian was the stronger of the two men. But Medo-Persian, one empire, which had two rulers, and they occupied dominion in the world for basically 200 years. And that's what Daniel saw in vision. But then, to his amazement, as he considered the ram, he saw a he-goat come. A he-goat that was so fast, it did not seem that his feet ever touched the ground. And this he-goat had a single horn, a notable horn, between his eyes. And yet, that horn was broken. And in its place stood up four kingdoms, but not as great as the first horn. And so we find that what we have in this chapter has actually taken place in history. For we do know that after the Medo-Persian Empire was conquered by Greece, then Greece became the world empire. And so we find what the angel is going to reveal unto Daniel as to its meaning in relation to the purposes of God. It was prophecy, a prophecy that was made, years before ever the history took place. And so we have, in that sense, in this vision, we have that which has been fulfilled in history. But let's look at one or two details, especially when we come to the He-Goat. You see, the Medo-Persian Empire was soon overthrown by Greece, and yet we find that Greece was just bits and pieces, but brought together by a young man named Alexander. For after all, he was only 20 when he became king of Greece. But he made that people into a mighty empire. And with such swiftness, they destroyed the Medo-Persian Empire, so that the Greek Empire, it came into being. And, Alexander was 20 when he came to power. At 31, he died. So the Grecian Empire, at its height, only lasted the years that Alexander the Great lived. And so we find that upon his death, that is, when that great horn was broken, the kingdom, the whole Grecian Empire, was divided before the four generals that served under Alexander. And they were told, out of one of those kingdoms, of one of those four generals, arose a little horn. And now we have, in the verses that follow, a description of the little horn and his doings. Now we do know, at least from history, that in the year 168 BC, in that very empire, rose again a young man, Antiochus Epiphanes. And he came up, that's why he's described as a little horn. He came and became a great power. And he, by his great power, he moved. And, number one, he was a Jew hater. He was anti-Semitic. And when we read through the history of what he did, he defiled the temple of God in Jerusalem. He destroyed many of the people of God, that is the Jews. And so we find that in history, in 168 BC, here is this Antiochus Epiphanes becoming this little horn and become a great power in this particular kingdom, the part of the original Grecian kingdom. Now we find he had great power, but not his own, indicating to us that his power was substantiated from other powers. And it has been suggested, of course, at least in history, that other powers put themselves alongside of Alexander. And so he had great power overall. And so we find, really, that in the vision that was given unto Daniel, we have the explained to him by Gabriel that, after all, the first was Medo-Persia, conquered by Alexander the Great in Grecia. His empire was broken into four, consequent upon his death, and out of one part of that one kingdom now, we have this little horn that's risen up, and, he defiled the temple. He destroyed the people of God. There are some difficulties, of course, in the passage. When we read that the man who exhorted himself, at least in his heart, but then in practice, we find that Antiochus Epiphanes, he actually exhorted himself, and he built within the temple of Jerusalem the temple of Jupiter. And so he defiled the temple of God. We're told then he offered upon the altar of the temple of God the sow's flesh, and the horns of the altar was anointed with the blood of the killed sow. And so he defiled the very altar. Another thing he did was this. God, of course, had arranged, according to Numbers chapter 6, Leviticus chapter 6, that after all, there would be a morning and an evening burnt offering. Every morning in Israel's day began with a burnt offering. Every evening of Israel's day finished with a burnt offering. But this man, he took away the morning and the evening sacrifices. I take that simply to mean he stopped all Jewish worship. He stopped the morning and evening burnt offering being offered unto God. And instead, having put his own soldiers within the temple so that no Jewish worship could take place, he introduced a false worship, the temple of Jupiter, and he offered that which was abhorrent to God upon the very altar of God. And then we're told that this went on for, 2,300 days, morning and evening. I think you'll find in your margin, it just says 200,000 morning and evenings. 2,300 morning and evenings. Meaning, you have to have that number. And when you have that number, you know you've got almost the same period of time as 3.5 years of Daniel chapter 9 that we'll be looking at next week. And so we find when the question was raised, how long will these things go on defiling the temple of God and altogether prohibiting any worship to God? That was the time that was given. And as far as history is concerned, it was about that period of time that Antiochus Epiphanes operated in defiling and offering upon the altar of God that was altogether abhorrent to God. Then the question is raised, of course, why? Why did God allow this man to do what he did, to build a temple, of Jupiter within the temple of God, and to offer upon the altar of God that was abhorrent to God, and to stop all Jewish worship? And not only that, to kill many of the Jews, for he was a Jew hater. And when he refers to no casting down stars from the host of heaven, I take it it's not literal stars, but the hierarchy of the temple among the Jews, they came under his anger, his wrath, and he killed them, stamped them under his feet, as it were. And so we find that in this vision, we have brought before us things that happened years ago now, as far as we're concerned, because we're looking back. And what was prophecy when Daniel wrote these things is history from that standpoint at this present time. But verse 26 is very important. Because now when it comes to the interpretation, if that was a vision, and it says in verse 26 the vision was true, these things did happen in history, but now says Gabriel unto Daniel, shut up the book, for the vision is not for many days, indicating to us that beside the historical events that seem to coincide with the vision of chapter 8, there is yet a prophetic side to this vision. In other words, beside what happened in history will be repeated in the future. That's why in verse 17 and verse 19, three times over, you refer to the end of the time or the end of the days. And again in verse 20 and verse 23, you get the latter times. In other words, indicating to us that what has happened in history actually is going to happen again in the future. And so I tell you that what this vision sets before us today is what is yet to take place in the future, indicating to us that when God raises up Israel again, takes up his purposes with Israel again after the rapture of the church, it seems to me that these other empires will, the enemies of Jerusalem, the enemies of Jews, they will be raised too. And so maybe what the angel is saying unto Daniel, what will be seen in history, will be repeated in prophecy. And so it may well be that these kingdoms, as we suggested from chapter 7, these three kingdoms prior to the fourth kingdom will have their place again in the world. And so we find that what we have before us, as far as the future is concerned, that there will be a man who will rise up and who will do that which is done in the record for us in this chapter but more so. And so you see, when we come to the actual revelation, when Gabriel gave the meaning to Daniel, the meaning has to go to the future. And so we can rest assured that in the future, after the church is gone, raptured home to heaven, there will be a movement upon earth. God will move again with his people to fulfill his purpose in Israel. And then there will be a movement among the nations. And then there will be one who will be raised up, a little horn. In Daniel chapter 8, I take it, the same little horn of chapter 7. And the little horn of chapter 7 and chapter 8 is, after all, the man of sin of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and the beast of Revelation 13, and the Antichrist of 1 John chapter 2. All these titles refer to the same person, that one who will be raised up, and that by the dragon, Satan, according to Revelation 12, who, being cast out of heaven, he will bring with him all his angels in rebellion with him, and knowing that his time is short, and being full of wrath, he will seek to destroy altogether the Jewish nation. And so we find in chapter 13 of Revelation, and in those opening verses, that what the dragon does, he calls up onto this political scene a man described as the beast. To him is given power, authority, and the throne. In other words, the little horn of Daniel chapter 7, seen again in Daniel chapter 8, and now seen again as a man of sin of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, he is actually a satanic agent, one in whom Satan embodies himself. And so this man will have great power. And what Antiochus Epiphanes did in the history, this man will do worse when it comes to a future day. You see, this one, this little horn, the beast, and the Antichrist, having made a covenant with the Jews for 7 years, halfway through that 7 years, that covenant will be set aside, and the time of the great tribulation will begin to run its course. Now, then, may well be that these days of which Daniel 8 refers to has now a reference to that last 3.5 years, 1260 days. And so we find that this one, the beast, from the middle of the week to the until the Lord comes at his second advent, will do worse even than Antiochus Epiphanes did in relation to the Jews and the worship of God. And so we find from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, he likewise will set himself up in the temple of God and proclaim himself to be God. And so we find that during that last 3.5 years of Daniel's 70th week, the time of the great tribulation, there will be a man who would take the place of God in the temple of God. And he will be a persecutor of the Jews as never before. And the Jews will suffer as they've never ever suffered. Even the sufferings of the Jews at the hand of the Germans in the last war will just fade into insignificance to that which lies before the Jewish nation in the future, when the man of sin, the beast, the Antichrist, this little horn, comes upon the stage of political power. And now the embodiment of Satan has great power, and he will accomplish, and he will defile, and he will destroy, and he will stop all the worship of God. But only for those number of days. Because you see, the great tribulation will have its end when the Lord Jesus Christ comes from heaven to establish his kingdom on earth. And the first thing the Lord will do on his coming to earth will be to take this little horn, the beast, the man of sin, the Antichrist, and cast him along with the false prophet, in alive into the lake of fire and brimstone. And so you see, in chapter 8, we have a vision which has an historical setting, or so to say, historical fulfillment. But it's not complete fulfillment. It's going to happen all over again after the church is gone, when the beast has been brought up on the stage, as it were, and given his power from Satan himself. Then these things will happen in far greater measure, and the Jews will suffer as never, never before. That explains verse 27. For when Daniel realized the meaning of the vision as given to him by Gabriel, now, many days he was sick, indicating to us, for after all, Daniel was a Jew. When he realized what was before his nation, it deeply affected him physically. When he thought all the suffering that was ahead, I suppose we could just make the application. We who have knowledge of things that are yet to be, would we have the same kind of feelings in relation to those who are not saved? The unbelieving men and women who are going to suffer under the judgment of God during those days of tribulation? That's what affected Daniel. When he realized what his people would suffer, it affected him physically. But then after many days, he rose up and did the king's business. And so we are busy about the king's business today. But let us not be indifferent to what will be the experience of unbelievers, those who are left behind when the Lord comes for the church. We ought to have a deep concern for them in the light of what Scripture reveals to us. And so we find in this chapter interesting elements, difficult in places, but very interesting, because it does show us what God is going to do in the future has actually been accomplished historically, and God knew it all beforehand. That's why we would say prophecy is a miracle. God telling before time what will happen years later in exact detail. And that's what we have in this chapter. And we trust God will bless his word. Amen.